The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another award-winning Kiefer and Curry show here on Tony Curry Radio. The TKR app is available. Of course, it is very, very easy to get. It takes you 3 or 4 seconds. You can get through Apple or Android, and you can listen to it 24 hours a day. Great classic rock and roll. Not to mention fantastic shows. We have a show on here with the Damon Johnson Show. We have a show on here with Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top. We have a Mission Minded. We have shows with the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. We just got wonderful clients. Southern Precision Staffing, they do a big show called ACDC's Live Wire Wednesday. We have 14 different shows. And of course, I'd be remiss not to mention two of our favorite shows, the Kiefer and Curry Show, which of course I shamelessly plug right now. And of course, Kip Kiefer's show called Need to Know, which we'll record every single Monday. You can hear all those shows at least 5 times a week here on the Tony Curry Radio app. And wherever you get your favorite podcast, we're available in every major industry. So I consider Kip a brother in arms when it comes to radio broadcasting. I would venture to guess that I don't know when your first radio broadcast was, Kip, but I would bet you've been doing radio about as long as I have been, correct?
Oh, I think that's probably accurate. My initial exposure was right after high school in Atlanta. I got a gig from the play-by-play announcer of the Atlanta Flames, Jiggs McDonald, who had befriended him when the Flames had come to Atlanta in the 70s, and Jiggs was doing some programs on WGST in Atlanta and signed me up to be an intern. So that was my first experience, and I got a little on-air action, although I was 17, anxious to get a lot more, but that was my first time, and it got the bug and had it ever since. I think I've described on some of my other shows that my earliest broadcasting was as a little guy in my backyard. I'd take a football one Christmas, and it's that season, so it's a good thing to talk about. I remember I opened a package, and I got the most fascinating, fantastic present, one of the most memorable of my life, and it probably cost $1.50. It was a little plastic football tee that I could tee the ball up and actually kick it and pretend to be making field goals and kickoff games. But, Tony, I would do the play-by-play. I'd throw to myself. I'd hand off to myself. I'd tackle myself while I described all the action. And then at halftime, I literally would go inside. I'd hang up these piece of paper with the scores from out of town and do the halftime show and then go back and play the second half. So I had the broadcast bug basically from the time that I came out of the womb.
This is really interesting because I, you know, you and I speak before we do the show, and there are some methods of the madness. But I really had no clue. We're going to be doing a show on the Talk 99.5, which, of course, is a radio station that I've got a lot of history with. I actually got started here.
I call it the house that Tony built.
There you go. 99.5, of course, that was classic rock when I first came on it back in 1988. And, of course, it was also the station that that I end up breaking up with, if you will. And so you have been nice enough to ask me if I would actually do a show with you on the 26th of December and fill in. And you talk about this bug. I think this is really interesting because a lot of people get the radio bug, but the radio bug doesn't want them. There's that situation. And then if you've been so as blessed as Kip and I have been, you've actually turned it into somewhat of not more just than a hobby, but of a career, something that actually means something that can actually put some food on the table. But you talk about that bug. I think that's really interesting because I know a lot more people that are in radio that have the bug, but the bug doesn't want them. And it's sad because a lot of people want to do radio. You brought up something that I just think is absolutely miraculous that no one listening to this show right now is going to understand or get, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. You used to be able to go into any market in this country, and if you wanted to do a radio show, you could do a radio show. You could make a phone call to somebody. You could call a GM or you call a program director of a local radio station and say, listen, and really it was about your pipes. You know, you sound like you got good pipes. If you had good pipes, anyone would put you on the radio station, at least on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday overnight. And it was that easy to get on the radio as long as, you know, you protected the license, you didn't drop a bunch of F-bombs and you had decent pipes, you could get on a radio station. Now you'd be lucky to be able to get in that parking lot. They probably wouldn't even let you in the parking parking lot because there's nobody there anymore. Of course, the doors are locked. There's surveillance and there's security, and you can't even get in the building anymore. I venture to guess it's going to be kind of difficult to get in Talk 99.5 coming up on the day after Christmas, just because we're going to have to call someone to come down and let us in. You know, we used to have back door key. We used to get in. We could get in and do whatever we wanted. But I know I'm talking a lot here, Dan, but I'll probably be doing a lot of that because this brings back so many memories. But talk about this bug that you had, because I think that's really interesting. It's a different bug for every individual.
Yeah, you know, people still, because my family moved when I was 8 years old to Atlanta, was born in the Washington, D.C. area, and got to Atlanta and went through most of my formative years there, all of most of my elementary school career into high school. And it's funny, growing up in the South, people say to me, well, how come you don't have a Southern accent? And I said, well, it's pretty simple. I didn't learn to talk by talking to other classmates and teachers and all of the traditional studies. I'll tell you who I learned to talk from: guys like Kurt Gowdy and Ray Scott,
yes,
and some of the iconic 1960s, 70s football broadcasters is who taught me to speak. And I tried to mimic them and imitate them.
Do you know how many people tried to mimic Howard Cosell? Do you remember? I mean, everyone used to do their Howard Cosell voice. Go ahead, continue, man. I'm loving this. Go ahead. Fill my brain.
Yeah, Howard Cosell, one of my favorite in Atlanta. We had a tight end for the Falcons named Jim Mitchell. And the Falcons were on Monday Night Football late in his career. And Steve Bartkowski threw a pass right in his breadbasket that my grandmother could have caught. And Jim dropped it. And Howard Cosell said, "It is now apparent that the once all-pro skills of Jim Mitchell have totally deteriorated."
I love that. I love it.
That's the kind of commentary that Howard Cosell brought.
Oh, man, it's so good. I got goosebumps. That is awesome.
He's now totally deteriorated. So that's to this day, my friends and I, if we see somebody that we kind of pity and that just doesn't have any game anymore, that's what we say, you know, about like another friend of ours, you know, the skills of, will remain nameless here, have totally deteriorated. So, yeah, that was an era that just captured me. And Tony, I got lucky. You're talking about access. The access for me came because the thing that became my primary career also facilitated what I wanted to do. Was, you know, I would have been happy to do full-time radio, TV, anything, sports particularly, but I have the opportunity when I was still interning at WGST, and I actually was starting to get a little bit more on the air as a regular person, a regular on-air host as time went on. But I found out early on in radio, even then, that there was so much politics involved. I remember one show, and you'll appreciate this. It wasn't like this era. On the day that bowl games were announced in college football, there were only a handful of them. And it was a big deal to compete against the other WSB, in this case in Atlanta, which was the biggest station. GST did a lot of sports, but we had a whole staff assembled and were just scrambling to call bowl directors and people on those committees and athletic directors and coaches, and were trying to find out in a frenzy just moments before the announcements where teams were going for bowl games, because we didn't have the tie-ins and affiliations and all that we have today. It was a big scoop to find out where Georgia or Georgia Tech was going to go or Alabama. So I was really working the phones and just kind of took charge of that show. I was 19 or 20 years old and was saying, we need to call so-and-so, we need to do this, we need to do that. I was running in, giving updates on the air. And after the show, the general manager called and got everybody together on a speaker and said, "I just want to tell you guys, that was as good as it gets." He said, "We were scooping WSB by 30, 40 minutes. He said, it was just amazing the show you guys put together. And it was real gratifying for me because, I knew I was kind of the lifeblood of that.
Yeah.
And the two on-air hosts at the time, was a guy named Dennis Dumbler. What a perfect name for him. And another guy who went on, I think it's Dave O'Brien, but he went on to work for NESN, the New England Sports Network, for many years after that. He was a real pro, but Dennis Dumbler was the typical guy. And I know you've come across thousands of these guys in radio who had an ego the size of the great outdoors. Mm-hmm. After that call with the GM, he calls me into a room and he says, "You really insulted a lot of people here today." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, you're an intern. You don't just take over a show and tell people what to do." And you know, Tony, it really, I remember that like it was yesterday, because that was my first experience with finding out that, you know, it doesn't matter what your talent level are or what your strengths are. It's who they perceive you to be. And mm-hmm. if you're not in that place that you can do something like that and take charge, even though it creates a great product, then, you know, it's somehow some kind of negative reflection on you. Wow. And that's a lesson that's always stuck with me, that you have to play the game, and that's unfortunate.
That is an unbelievable story. And there are a lot of politics. I know a lot of people are going to make this comparison to WKRP in Cincinnati. And, you know, a lot of people are like, "Did you work in Cincinnati since you worked in Cincinnati?" And I'm like,
"Oh, sure.
No, I didn't." But I will say this, they nailed that crew. To the staffing, to the casting, to the way they reacted, to the Herb Tarlicks, to the Les Nesmans, to the Howard Hessmans, they nailed every single personality on that TV show almost to a T. And if you want to know what it was really like to work in radio, I can honestly look at that and say this is pretty doggone close.
And the clueless GM Gordon Jump played him.
Yeah.
I mean, the prototypes that they had in that show were absolutely perfect.
Andy Summers, the PD. I mean, it was just so perfectly fit. It was really great. And I don't even know if they knew what they were doing at the time and moment. And you remember the first time that show ran, it didn't do particularly well. It did great in syndication. They brought it back as a second run show. And then of course it fell on its face. And then it came back in syndication again and did really well, back in the early 90s and mid 90s. You know, you were talking about, stepping up, and you know, something that to go back, you know, we had to have a license to be on the radio. By the way, I found my first radio license in an old junk drawer a couple of days ago. It was the first license I got when I was the age of 14 years of age. You had to have an FCC license. I don't no longer think you have to have that anymore. You also had to take meter readings. We had to take meter readings every hour on the hour. Do you remember taking meter readings?
I remember that.
If you forgot meter readings, you could lose your job. You had to take meter readings 24 hours a day, which meant you needed someone at the radio station 24 hours a day. I remember people that would usually go down. They lived near the radio station, particularly if they're an engineer. They would make the drive 15 minutes just to go to the radio station to take meter readings to make sure they weren't running over the meters. That was important, that your radio station wasn't performing at a level higher than it was supposed to, because that's, you know, how you get people to listen. If you're a 50,000 watt station, you could pop your power a little bit and get more listeners. You would do that. That was one of the cheating ways to do it. And so they took that stuff real seriously. So you had to take meter readings, amp readings and stuff every single hour. But I remember, you know, and we'll go back to 1993 and the great snowstorm we had here. Ugh. I'll never forget, because, you know, the definition of radio, of radio period, is to be a community oriented, local branched type of, you say, government, but a way to get information. It's primarily there for information. Radio wasn't there for music. It wasn't there for shows. It was there primarily, and certainly World War II had a big part of that, in the VOA and the Voice of America. Absolutely. Had a huge part in that. That's all people had to listen to, was the radio, because if you had a transistor radio, you were good to go. If you had a battery or 9-volt, you were good to go. TV didn't work when the power didn't work. If your power was out, you didn't have power, but you always had that radio. You always had that to depend on. And I always remember that. So I remember in 1993, you know, we weren't planning on having that huge blizzard that we had with 13, 14, 15 inches of snow in the Homewood area, and a swath, I think, that was probably about a foot deeper than that in my backyard. But I remember living down the street from the radio station. And, you know, that was one of those things where they're expecting a light dusting. And next thing you know, we knew we had something real special going on. And you know what I did? Drove up to the radio station. I took my sleeping bag And was like, and I was, and people looked at me like I was crazy. Now, you know, I'd only been here for a couple of years because I moved here in 1988. They're like, oh, this Yank, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He doesn't understand that, you know, if it snows more than a half inch, we're snowed in for now. It's like, no, I do understand that. That's why I'm here with my sleeping bag. But they could not believe that a guy was going to spend the night and sleep on the floor of the radio station to inform his audience what was going on. And it was probably the biggest and best day in radio history for me anyway, just because I knew everybody in this town was listening. We had no power for 3 or 4 days. You had nothing to listen to or nothing to watch. The only way you could get any information was through your radio station. That's when people still held those 9-volt transistor radios, and people were listening to the radio to get their information. They were huddled down in the basement or outside watching the thunder snow and trying to figure out what the hell was going on. They were listening to 99.5 because they knew I was going to be there with them. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I remember a guy that you've worked with, Richard Dixon, was a big part of that. You'd be sitting down there and you'd be 7, 8, 9 hours in. And someone would come in. You know what I'm going to say here. Someone would come in and say, listen, it's time to take you off. You're like, no, I'm good. I can go another 6 or 7 hours. And this would be the same son of a bitch that was complaining over weekends that their 4-hour shift was too long. You know what I mean? Why am I working on Saturdays at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday afternoon? There's college football. These 4-hour shifts are too long. Yet I was into my 12th hour of Snarmageddon. And I was like, no, I'm good to go. I can go as long as you need me, folks. You know, I was telling the boss, I'm good to go. I can go 24 hours a day if you need me to, because that was the product, man. That was the special part. That was something that we could do in radio that no one else, you know, in television or any other medium could do. It was just super exciting. It was super cool. And that's what it meant a lot to me. That was the bug that I got.
I love that. I had just come to Birmingham in July of 92 because we opened the Birmingham race course for Greyhound racing. And then later we had both horses and dogs. But the night of the blizzard, it was a Friday night when it kind of blew in. We were running a regular Greyhound card. I think it was March 27th, maybe, but it was late. It was clearly in the spring. And that was the flukiest thing, 17 inches in a lot of parts of Birmingham. But I remember I was stranded at the Birmingham racecourse, Tony, with Charlie McIntosh, the general manager, and some other staff. But Charlie had, of course, keys to all of the kitchen and bar facilities. And those 3 days for us were a hoot. We just had a great time. And I'm sure we probably had Tony Curry on in the background while all that was going on. So that's some great memories. I was going to tell you that the thing that really helped me kind of live this dream is my dad had been transferred to Memphis. And my folks were divorced, and I had kind of an estranged relationship with him, but it was a chance to kind of patch up things and reunite. And I got the chance. He called me over the winter. He, big racetrack guy, had gotten involved at South and Greyhound Park, which is in West Memphis, actually, across the bridge from Memphis, which at the time was the world's largest greyhound racing operation. And he called me one winter and said, hey, I've gotten to know all the guys that run this track, and the longtime announcer is retiring. You should do a tape and try to become the track announcer. Wow. Because he knew I could do it. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it all my life. He was taking me to the Washington area horse tracks, Laurel and Bowie, when I was a 6 or 7 year old kid. I didn't learn how to read from a C-spot run. I learned to read by looking at the racing form and saying C7 horse can't run.
I love it.
But so he knew I could do the job. I've been calling races all my life. So I actually got on a bus in Atlanta and rode down to a green track in Alabama, which was open at the time. It was in beyond Tuscaloosa. And I stood down on the rail with an old timey cape recorder, and I called some races, sent them to Memphis. And lo and behold, I got the job as the voice of South and Greyhound Racing at 22 years old. They put this stupid kid in the booth. But what came with that, Tony, was something that has been a huge benefit for me my whole career. What came with that was a nightly results show with all the prices and results on one of the local Memphis radio stations. Mm-hmm. And it was the Kip Kiefer, you know, I don't know what we called it, something like Southland Wrap-Up. But it was my first real show of my own. And that really gave me the opportunity throughout my career as I went from Southland to other stations. I became the specialist for the company that owned that track, Delaware North. They sent me to Florida and Wisconsin and Arizona, all these places where tracks were opening. And I just became kind of the marketing and publicity guy. And always with those gigs came the opportunity to have shows. And I branched more into sports every time I had the opportunity and tried to do kind of combination racing and sports shows. And when I got hired here in 1992 to come to Birmingham, one of the first people I met was the great Herb Winches through Monty Ballard, our mutual friend. Monty and Herb are lifelong best friends. And he introduced me to Herb. And next thing you know, I'm sitting in the Sports Talk 690 studios hosting along with Herb and Ben and filling in when one of them were out. You talk about jumping into just an unbelievable opportunity. That was the infancy, the very birth. Herb arguably is one of the real pioneers of sports radio, because in Birmingham, at least, when Dick Broadcasting owned that station, Herb convinced them that all sports 24 hours a day was going to be a great concept. And that turned out to be a great launching pad for me to come to Birmingham right at the time all that was happening, because I finally got a chance to do conventional sports after being typecast as a, quote, racing guy for a long time, which still plagues me at times. But I think after all these years, I finally shed that label.
There you go. That's a great story. And yes, I don't think there's anyone that in the right mind that's worked in radio that hasn't had some type of show with Herb Winches at some point. I've got an opportunity. I've been to four different Olympics with Herb.
We went, of course, to
Switzerland together. We did so many different things together, so many radio shows. And yes, if you ask me if a story is true, chances are it probably is.
But real quick, I know this isn't exactly on the topic, but your guys' trip to Lillehammer and you guys wanted that bar at midnight. You got to tell that story real quick.
Yeah. So we're at a Viking, we're at a Viking bar. It's a Viking bar. I mean, and if you think of something like him from Disney, you know, with the dark wood and the horns coming out from the sides of the building. I mean, that's what it was. It was a Viking building. It was in Norway. And I remember it being, after midnight. And of course, the hours over there are a little different than they are when it comes to bar going around here. And so we walk in, Herb and I stumble in, and there's a woman sitting at the bar who it keeps falling off her chair. And these are not like 3 foot bar stools. These are like 8 foot bar stools. These are the highest bar stools I've ever seen. She keeps ordering a round of drinks. She keeps falling off her chair and she keeps hitting the floor with a thud. And of course, you know, the minute that happens, Herb would get up or I would get up and we would go to help them out. And then someone would say, no, she's got this. This is her deal. She needs to learn. She needs to figure this out. And we're kind of looking at each other as Southern gentlemen going, we can't allow this. So this must have
happened.
Two Vikings from Kentucky. This must have happened 4 or 5 different times. And so then we just kind of let it go and everyone just kind of laughed it off. And she, of course, would get back up in the bar stool, order another one and fall off. Well, shortly thereafter, a gentleman comes over to our table. And again, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. It's really dark. There were no lights. It was all candles. I mean, it was candlelight. It was a true Viking bar. And a gentleman walks over to our table and Herb and I are drinking, one of Budweiser's finest there in Lillehammer. And the guy looks at me and says, do you mind if I have a dance? And I said, pardon me. He says, do you mind if I have a dance with your partner? And he was talking about Herb. And at that moment in time, I was so happy that another man found Herb more attractive than he found me at that given time. If there was ever a time where he teased me about being better looking than me, he could have it in that moment. And of course, Herb's looking at me going, dude, you're not going to say yes, are you? And I said, you know what? We're over here on vacation. I don't think a little dance is going to hurt anybody.
Go ahead and cut the rug, Herbie.
And he grabbed her by the hand. And next thing you know, they went out there. And of course, Herb would take any situation and would put a silver lining on it. He came back with rosy cheeks, a little smirk on his face. And he actually think he had a good time dancing with this guy. But yeah, we found out that we were actually in a Viking gay bar. We were in
a gay Viking. Viking bar. Who knew?
A gay Viking bar in Lillehammer, Norway, of all the places for us to find.
That's just awesome.
We just had so much fun. It was such a blast to go through those stories. But it's radio's gotten so much different, and it's interesting because I still talk to. I call her the sour grapers. There's a lot of people that obviously were in radio for a long period of time that really were the backbone and were super important to exactly how music and content developed on AM and FM radio signals as we know them today. And they do have sour grapes in that, we've syndicated so many things and nothing special anymore. And again, if you had a special show, Kip Kiefer was, the program director of one radio station or maybe the janitor of another. And you decided, hey, listen, I think I could do a good show here. Someone would give you a shot. And that shot's not there anymore. And where you used to have 24 on-air personalities, now you're lucky to have two. And, we mentioned, you call the radio station, no one's going to answer the phone. That holds true. But we will be coming up on the 26th. And that was something, this whole show was about, let's talk about, I thought maybe we could brainstorm some ideas about Kip and Tony, what we're going to talk about on Talk 99.5 on the 26th, what we could talk about. But then I thought maybe we could get an actual show out of this and it could be somewhat entertaining, and it has been to no end. It's been fantastic. So I thought maybe we could talk about, what is Kip and Tony going to talk about? But one of those things I want to do is I want to bring back the phone call. And you got those phone callers, you got those people that call every single day. We know who you are. It's John from Birchwood. Hey, John, welcome back in. It's the guy that he's got to be on the radio every single day. He's the one that's got the radio playing in the background. Here, let me turn this down for you. Thanks for taking my call, that guy. But we certainly want to be back to that local community feel where you feel like you're actually part of the Kip and Tony show. And we want to do that coming up on Monday the 26th. So we will take phone calls, and there's something else I wanted to bring up too that I think would be really interesting. I would love to hear, and if you listened to our show last week on the Kiefer and Curry show, I would love to take some relationship advice and send some relationship advice out for not only men but women who are in their 50s who are having a hard time finding that next mate. I think that would be fascinating radio.
Yeah, there's so much great stuff, and the power of talk radio to me is so seducing, because let me tell you a quick story. My longtime partner and sometimes at least for me, pretend girlfriend, Terry Quillian, who's somebody I think the world of, and she's so talented and such a great communicator. But we were blessed with having our own show here on Talk 99.5 called The Ride Home, following the great Leland Whaley every day on Talk 99.5. And that show grew in leaps and bounds. But just to give you kind of the power and the fact that it's still alive and well, when Donald Trump was elected president, one of the first things he did was go back and rescind a lot of the restrictions the Obama administration had put on the coal industry, which is something that, I had no idea Alabama even had anything to do with it. We were talking about things he had done in the early days of administration and just kind of threw that out. Tony, over the next 3 hours, we got so many phone calls from people in the coal industry in Alabama who had heard. Somebody had heard this and called us and talked about how this is the most exciting news for them because it's given them their job back and their opportunity back. And I don't know if the word just got around, but the rest of that show was all people calling saying what a tremendous thing that had been for their lives. And who even knew, A, that there was that kind of industry in this state, and B, that this many people were in touch with our program that could call and react to that. And that might sound, puzzling to somebody just listening to what I'm saying, but I think it gave me the perspective that, if you get into some subject matter that's important to people and people can relate to, you reestablish that connection. And this is a society where we don't talk to each other very much anymore.
Right on, man.
We exchange messages and texts and emails and, to have conversations with people about substantive things There's very few vehicles that are as wonderful as
we don't even take phone calls on radio anymore. We're in the we're on the communication business, and I'm listening to NPR the other night. They're like, "Hey, listen, if you got a message you want to send us, just text us or email us." I'm like, text us or email us. That was part of the allure of beautiful live radio, was to actually talk to those people that you were actually listening to.
I love talking to people. We got every Sunday on the morning after our college football show, we just have a lineup of callers. And, you know, sometimes Terry used to get depressed if the phone lines weren't just full. And, you know, all of our different great program directors like John Saber and A.J. Johnson would say, "Hey, you guys are the feature attraction here. People want to hear you guys talk, but we want to talk to people." And that's what I think is fantastic about talk radio, and can't wait to have a chance to do that show with you the day after Christmas, because I think we're going to have a blast, and I know we're going to get a lot of callers.
No, I think that maybe we locked the doors, man, and we, unbeknownst to some people, they would be ripping the doors off the hinges at 10 o'clock to get out. We may be actually ripping them up so we can stay in. That's how much we love radio. So, and I would bet whoever's working on the 26th at 10 o'clock would probably be okay with us taking their 4-hour shift. So if that happens, you may hear some Kiefer and Curry marathon going on Boxing Day, so look out for yourself.
Well, maybe it'll snow, Tony, and you can relive the glory days of 1993.
There you go. He's Kip Kiefer. I'm Tony Curry. The Kiefer and Curry Show. We do it every single week here on the TKR app. Thanks to 100,000 folks who download the show, and of course, you can hear the show at least 5 days a week wherever you get your favorite podcast, on the Tony Curry Radio Facebook page. We're all over the place. No matter where you're listening to us, you can find us, and of course, you can also hear us ABC 3340, 10:30 to 11 o'clock every Saturday morning. We're not going to be on this week, but we'll have on the next show as we get set. We are on fire on our picks. It's been unbelievable how good our picks have been. So we'll have those as continue here. Case Kiefer, of course, Terry Quillian doing her blast from her little knack. She does fantastic work too. I just love when she goes off on one of her rants. I think she's fantastic. So we'll have her on. And of course, the legend giving the Tide forecast as well. It's all coming up on ABC 3340. And then again on Talk 99.5 on the 26th from 6 until 10. We're all over the place, partner. Until next week, thank you so much, man.
Hey, Tony, this has been a blast. Can't wait for the day after Christmas on 99.5.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.